Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Together is a series of intimate and thoughtful conversations hosted by SFU alums Salome Mengo Morales, Ira Rishi, undergraduate student Kovo, and myself, Paola Quiroz Cruz, one of the educators at the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. Featuring guests from diverse professional and life experiences, these interviews explore how healing, while deeply personal, is also profoundly communal. Healing thrives when communities come together to create spaces, attitudes, and practices that support it. Join us as we listen, reflect, and reimagine healing as a shared responsibility. In this episode, Tanu Gamble, one of the SFU's Indigenous counselors, invites us to consider communal healing as rooted in relationships and belonging, encouraging reflection on the values we bring into our relationships and how we create spaces where people feel genuinely welcome. She reflects on how history, intergenerational impacts, persistent institutional trauma, life experiences, and identity intersects in all what we do, and why healing must honor these layered realities. Tanu highlights the importance of contextualized approaches to healing, encouraging us to rethink how we view personal experiences. What we often see as individual struggles or traumas may actually be the result of centuries of historical, cultural, and societal forces that have continually shaped and affect Indigenous bodies and communities. This conversation invites listeners to approach community care with humility, curiosity, and respect for the diverse paths people take towards healing. This conversation includes references to sexualized violence. We encourage you to take care for yourself and reach out to support resources if needed. Welcome, everybody. My name is Paola Quiroz Cruz, and I am today's host for this episode. I have been living for almost 22 years as an uninvited settler on the stolen Coast Salish lands at the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I grew up in Colombia, and since moving here, I have been learning and unlearning about Canadian history, and I am grateful for the privilege of continuously learning from Indigenous peoples on this land. In today's episode, our guest is Tanu Gamble. Welcome, Tanu, to Healing Together.
Thank you.
So Tanu is from the Haida and
Kikala
Nations on the north coast of BC, and she's a registered clinical counselor at SFU's Indigenous Student Center, IEC. Tanu has a bachelor in psychology and a master's in counseling psychology from UBC. Also, Tanu works with the students from a trauma-informed, feminist, and anti-oppressive framework, taking into consideration the multiple and complex layers of Indigenous student lives that impact their mental health and well-being. She strives to create a safe, warm, and empathetic environment where a student can feel heard and supported. Her approach is flexible and holistic, and she bases her interventions on what feels best with the students' life experience and their current needs. Together in this conversation, we will be exploring the role of different healing forms and perhaps connections with the roots and the land as a key component of community healing. We are grateful to have Tanu with us to share her reflections and wisdom. So, Tanu, thank you again for being here. And to begin this series, explore the idea that healing is both personal and collective. So, to start us off, I wanted to ask you, what does community healing mean to you?
Mm-hmm. Is it okay, Paula, if I just introduce myself a little bit?
Yes.
Does that feel okay?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, so definitely you shared some factual information. But just to sort of, you know, how I like to kind of start off is also acknowledging I'm an uninvited guest in these lands. My home territories are in northern BC, so in both Haida Gwaii and the Kakatla Nation, which is south of Prince Rupert in BC, but very remote. So I still remain very connected to those lands and to my family and community there. So I have been in this territory for close to 3 decades, so quite a long time. But I always like to sort of center myself in the roles that feel, I guess, most me. So I, first and foremost, I'm a mom to 3 young people, and I'm a partner and a daughter and a sister, a friend and a cousin to many. So those are sort of the roles that I like to kind of really situate myself in, and those are the things that I really sort of hold closest to my heart. Professionally, I am a registered clinical counselor, and I work here at SFU with the Indigenous students at the Indigenous Student Center, and also work in private practice with sort of like actually a really wide variety of different folks. But yeah, I just sort of wanted to make sure that... just to situate myself.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much for guiding us with that example, that sometimes we tend just to make our persona the professional life that we have, forgetting all the different roles that we have that are outside of what we do, but also how we share space with other people and who we are, as you mentioned. So thank you so much for doing that. Yeah. So yes, going back to that question, so, yes, what does communal healing mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard question, hey, Paula? I did read that, and I kind of sat with that for a little bit, and I think it depends on who you talk to, what that means, right? So I guess, you know, you can sort of take a really wide lens at that question and kind of consider, you know, how are... a group of people doing, like what, like how, what is their well-being, what are their measures of well-being, what does that look like what is their access to healthcare, what is their access to education, to emergency care, like all those kinds of things, housing, of course, employment. So sort of I think the wide lens would look like that. How are people doing in those sort of measures, but also I guess on an individual level, right? So sort of looking more I guess with that sort of like a smaller window of like, how is this person sort of feel on a day-to-day basis? How do they feel valued? How do they feel important in their community? Where do they belong? Do they feel like they belong? I think that's a really big part of that question in our well-being. So I think that's a really complicated question. Right. But I do think at the core of it, and maybe related to how I sort of wanted to introduce myself, I do think community healing is about relationships, right? So who do we have relationships with? What does that look like? What are the values we hold in a relationship? Those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yes, I hear you because, I mean, that's sometimes like with this question that I ask you, sometimes... that makes me think that how certain people will feel, I will have all the community / network or however they wanted to call it, to feel that they are going to have my back, to feel that I am going to feel supported, that I can go ahead with this healing, whereas other people won't have that next to them, or they feel that they don't have a variety of folks that they can lean on or that they can trust them or to share their own story. And then if we go wider, as you mentioned, collect other like institutions and mm-hmm. accessing to different type of supports. For some folks may be really easy, but mm-hmm. for some others, depending as you say, mm-hmm. right? Like, is this my territory? Is this, mm-hmm. I am familiar with the area, people know me, people don't know me, like then mm-hmm. it will be easier or not to yeah. think of that concept of community healing, right?
Yeah.
And moving to the other question, that is somehow, I am just curious. Because, you know, in this field that you work as a mm-hmm. counselor and supporting students, and also, as you mentioned, like as a family member and as a friend, mm-hmm. right? And as a woman that you are, mm-hmm. How your understanding of healing has evolved over the years,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in that connection with your community and cultural teachings.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that question, I guess, maybe runs parallel to like life experience, maybe, and just sort of learning and living and learning. But I think definitely when I was younger, and maybe when I was sort of moving through my academic sort of journey, I think I thought of healing as a more personal journey. An individual journey, whereas now I would definitely say that is not true. It is part of the picture, but that we actually exist in these networks, and we can only really sort of move forward and grow with those networks, right? Like on our own. So I really, I guess, coming to like actually a real rejection of that idea of like that it's an individual's responsibility to take care of themselves and to do it themselves, and that they only have responsibility for themselves. So I sort of really, you know, when I work with students or just anybody really, kind of move away from that idea of personal responsibility, which I think is a real sort of Western neoliberal idea of like that we just need to sort of pull up, whatever the saying is, pull up our bootstraps and like just sort of carry on. And without sort of acknowledging, like, how is it that we got here? How is mm-hmm. it that we find ourselves in these situations that communities as a whole or people as individuals, right? That there's so much context and our way of thinking, our way of being just didn't come out of thin air.
Yeah.
That we're so, you know, we're swimming in it, right? Mm-hmm. So just all of these ideas and beliefs about that, or even just sort of how we say, like, what does healing mean? It's like, you know, I guess that almost, I take from that almost this idea of like, oh, we're going to arrive somewhere one day and be healed. Uh-huh. Where, you know, I guess my perspective now is like, that's not how it works, right? Like sometimes hard things happen or, you know, to us personally or to our communities, and we don't ever just like heal from that and move on. It does live with us forever.
Mm-hmm.
But how we sort of learn to interact with that and manage that, I think, is what changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you were saying that you definitely learn with the years that mm-hmm. Having community is really important to do those processes mm-hmm. of healing.
Mm-hmm.
So what role do you think community plays? Mm-hmm. Right, in creating that space for healing and justice, mm-hmm. Especially after trauma or violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, maybe like there are so many different words we can use for that, like community. I mean, I guess really what it comes down to is whether or not someone feels like they belong somewhere. So maybe like, you know, if we're thinking specifically about our work here at the university, like, you know, we're employees here. We get paid to do something and to provide something for our students. And so how good are we at, you know, embracing our students, letting them know that this is, you know, a relatively safe place. It's as safe as we can possibly make it, that we're open to discussion, that we're open to hearing feedback, that we want them here. I mm-hmm. think that idea, like, we want you and you belong, like those two ideas sort of go hand in hand. So I think it is that feeling of belonging. So as a community, I think we hold a lot of responsibility to listen to our students, to sort of provide what they are asking for and what they are needing, instead of telling them what we think they need or what we think might be good for them, right? So sort of that more, I guess, reflective process of community, where it's like, I can't tell you what you need, but like, maybe let's like work together and figure out what that might look like. And then that's how community happens, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And then do you see that same example of like, in this context, as mm-hmm. As working here at SFU, mm-hmm. Expanded outside in the community, like mm-hmm. How that community out there, mm-hmm. Outside of this mm-hmm. community that we have here in the institution, mm-hmm. plays a role.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, so many different levels and layers, though, right? Like, you know, I think it like lots of things in life, we can't just call ourselves something and then just that is like, yeah. It's such like a, you know, there's just so many different elements. Like even when you think about like gathering spaces, or who has access to those gathering spaces, or how are those spaces being monitored or not monitored, like, you know, what are we providing for people, like just all of it is mm-hmm. such, you know, even how a space is set up. Like, if I think of my own experience, like going into a space, like say it's not like an Indigenous specific space, say it's like a doctor's office or something. Like, if they sort of, first of all, are like warm. So if somebody says hello, if somebody says like, how are you today? Like, those kinds of things go such a long way in building relationship. Like, there's very small acts of kindness. Or even if it's like, oh, I see, this sounds like almost kind of like I don't know, like such a minimal effort, but like if I see Indigenous art on the wall, I know it doesn't necessarily mean, oh, this person is gonna know something more mm-hmm. than the next sort of person, but it just sort of is like an idea of like, oh, you value that, like that is something you might know a little bit about, and that actually goes a long way. So there are just so many different things, I think, and I think actual like physical layout of space is actually really important too. Like, you know, how do we provide just like comfortable spaces for students to exist in,
mm-hmm.
or people to exist in,
and that they feel welcome, as you say, like even. It totally makes a huge difference mm-hmm. when you go, you know, you are going to the doctor, for example, as mm-hmm. you mentioned, you know, the space is not going to be like the super cozy office mm-hmm. or very warm environment, mm-hmm. but that, you know, they give you a smile, they ask you, how are you doing? They are not just like typing mm-hmm. in the computer mm-hmm. and what's your name, at what time is your appointment.
Yeah.
Then you start to feel, okay, in some way validated, mm-hmm. in some way, as you are, you know, like if someone is like, hello, like almost mm-hmm. showing you the space, welcome, mm-hmm. you're welcome here, we will help you mm-hmm. in 2 minutes or, but then that you feel also around those codes or mm-hmm. Different things that will remind you, oh, maybe here they will recognize who I am.
Yeah. It's just so interesting, like, to think about all the different places and spaces we navigate every day, and all of the different communities that might represent, and how they intersect and overlap, and what does that even mean? Like, when we say community, like, what are we talking about?
Exactly.
Is it like Canadian community?
Yeah.
Like Vancouver community? Like Indigenous community? Like, it's just all.
Yeah, and I really like it that you, rather than when we were talking about community healing, you mm-hmm. were going, well, this is actually about relationships, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Which is more concrete, mm-hmm. More tangible,
mm-hmm.
because we need to, in order to build those relationships, and then we start to have more people around, and then we continue building those relationships. So it's not just a group of people and not having that connection, right?
Yeah,
so that I really appreciate what you say when you made that kind of analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wanted to, we were thinking about, you know, all these good things that will create that sense of community or yeah. that feeling of community. And I wonder, in this particular role that you mm-hmm. have here, what are some of the, if you feel comfortable to share, what are the unique challenges that you have seen Indigenous survivors face that sometimes they go unseen? Not yeah. only for, like for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And then how do you approach those challenges in your work as a counselor?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know that I'd call them challenges. You know, I think just sort of different ways of being and beliefs we have about the world that are based on like our experience, not just only personally, but collectively. So I don't know that I'd call them challenges, but I think I certainly do pay attention to some things that maybe other, I don't know, non-Indigenous folks would pay attention to. I think the thing that we always have to remember, and I have found really helpful, the framework. So I learned this framework from a very dear friend, Jennifer Lee Kobel, who is also a therapist, and she has done a ton of training with Resba Menakem, who is an, he calls himself a somatic abolitionist, and he's wrote some amazing things. But anyways, he has this framework that he calls HIPP theory, H-I-P-P. So, and if he's, you know, a Black American man, and so he's sort of, you know, thinking and working in that context. But I think this idea really resonates for me as an Indigenous practitioner as well. The idea that when people come to us, there are these layers they come with. So the first is this idea of historical experience, right? Historical trauma, you might want to call it. Just whatever that history is, it's such a huge piece that exists. And then from that, we have, the intergenerational piece, of course. So there's this intergenerational piece, right? Where it's generation after generation, there's this legacy that gets sort of passed on. And then there's the persistent institutional racism and trauma that people experience. So that is not something that is historical. That is something that continues to happen as we speak. And then we come to like the personal. Mm-hmm. So like the experiences that an individual might have themselves. So every person that I see, I sort of, you know, try to hold all of that, right? So it's sort of moving away, and you know, he's of course talking about this framework of racism, right, that happens. So, and this is not something I think we intuitively know. I think as Indigenous people, like when I think of myself as a younger person, I definitely held a lot of that shame and a lot of that, like, this is my responsibility, like I have to figure this out. Whereas when we can sort of contextualize and bring so much more into the room, mm-hmm. we don't have to hold that shame. Like, that shame is not mine. Like, the things that have happened to us were not because we made bad choices or that we're bad people, like, inherently in any way, but that it actually takes, like, work to sort of, like,
separate them.
To separate that out and to sort of consider, like, how does that impact me, right? So I think that's a lot of work too, to even just figure out, how does that historical piece continue to impact me? What does that look like? How does it keep coming up? What does that look like in my family and then in my community? Like, mm-hmm. these are such big things that I think I spend a lot of time in.
Yeah.
Before we even get to the personal.
To the person. And then the intergenerational, yeah, as you mentioned. And the other one was the persistent
institutional
mm-hmm. which, wow, when you mentioned that, I have a movie in my head, you know, like, yeah, wow, yes.
Yeah. So I think a lot of that initial work when I start, because of course I work, like, it's this interesting intersection, right, where I have been trained, obviously, in a very Western way in Western institution and thought, like the whole idea of therapy, right, obviously mm-hmm. comes from a very Eurocentric point of view. And so, but these interesting ways that we can sort of start to bring back, like, that idea of relationship and what does that look like, and bring back the context of community or of, like, place, like, how does that all start to happen? But I think it's complicated and complex and slow moving sometimes, but I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, wow. Definitely there are so many layers there. When I was curious asking you about the unseen, what we cannot see, and then you are like so mentioning much. All this, so yeah, much.
Everything.
Even before, yeah, exactly, before to arrive into the personal, that
yeah.
It will be, of course, relevant. Mm-hmm. But now that I am thinking about it, when we arrive into the personal, maybe you realize that what you thought it was truly, truly personal is not it.
Mm-mm.
Because you have all those other layers
it's all connected
that are impacting you in ways that, as you mentioned when you were talking about shame, right? Like I carried this for so many years, and then I realized, hello, this is not something that I need to carry because it was imposed in indigenous bodies in history, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not something that is mine to carry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But then just to arrive there,
yeah,
and to untangle all these three pieces that you, because then we ended up thinking that the personal is all those three things that you mentioned before.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, and Resmaa talks about too, well, I say Resmaa as if I know him, I don't know him. Resmaa Menakem talks about, you know, that idea.
So
he does sort of specifically say, like, you know, if you sort of have a client that might say something like, my family is so messed up. It's like those kinds of beliefs about our family enter when we don't consider, like, trauma untreated and decontextualized looks like family dysfunction, right? Trauma untreated or unseen and decontextualized looks like personality. And it's not, right? It's like we are not those things. We are not the things that happen to us. So it's sort of like we need to bring back the context. And I think, as Indigenous people, we have a lived experience of what that is. But I think we also grew up in this, like what he always says, it's like it's in the air we breathe. Like we cannot not take in these beliefs about who we are, which are very racist and still continue to be extremely embedded in all of the things we see and we read. So it's just a lot of work. And to also just say, like, I don't just, you know, when I said it's like I have felt a lot of shame, it's not like I don't still. I'm just, like, quicker or maybe a little bit more skilled at being like, oh, wait, like, that's what that feeling is.
Mm.
And, like, being able to, as, you know, closer and closer to the moment that these things are happening, be able to do something that might be different, whether it's saying something or moving away from something or taking time to take care of myself, like those kinds of things. So it's not like ever it's like, oh, I can see that, so now I'll never have to struggle with it. It's like, no, it keeps sort of keeps living with you, and you just sort of, I mean, I said earlier, like, you just learn to manage it differently, I think.
Yeah, there is more awareness, right? An acknowledgement of, oh, what is that? Rather than continue absorbing that this is something personal.
Exactly.
Right?
That it's not me.
Yeah. And I just wanted to know what that means to provide trauma-informed care when working with survivors of sexualized violence, especially we were talking about all these three layers, Indigenous survivors navigating both the personal and intergenerational trauma. And I will add here, because I learned just now, the historical pieces as well, and then what they have to live ongoingly with institutions, with everything that they relate to.
So I mean, I think as like a model of care, I'm really in line with that idea of allowing the people that I'm sitting with to lead the way. So I don't I try my best to not situate myself as an expert in any way, or that somehow I know what they should do or anything like that. So I think it's a constant practice for me to just sort of like listen, to maybe ask questions, but to always allow the person I'm sitting with to sort of decide what feels best for them. And I think, you know, just speaking aloud very clearly, like, you have choice in this. Like, these are what some options might look like, but we don't have to do any of them, or we could do all of them, or we could do one of them. Mm-hmm. So just sort of giving, you know, some options if people feel like they need that. But I think the other thing I find myself often saying, I probably say this to like every single person I work with, like, this is an evolving process. Like, what feels really hard and important today might not feel like